The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
On his way to the end zone.
I'll tell you what, that was a spectacular play.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
What a play! Off to the races! Touchdown! Oh, he's done it again!
Now here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, Heath, and Ben.
Welcome to our Thursday show. We are getting crazy today. Get crazy with the Cheese Whiz for all of you 90s rock fans. We're going to talk about 10 crazy stats from 2021. Joe Burrow's yards per attempt and what you can expect next year. Jalen Waddle's weird season that looked nothing like what we saw from Jalen Waddle in college. Something that happened to Tyreek Hill in five straight games that hadn't happened in more than two straight games in any of the three previous seasons. The best big play running back in football and more. I'm Adam Azer. I'm here with Chris Towers and Heath Cummings. Guys, first question, first crazy question is a non-football question. What is the best song that has the word crazy in the title? Here are some options for you. You've got Aerosmith's Crazy. You've got Gnarls.
Not that one.
Yeah, it's that one for me. Gnarls Barkley Crazy. Beyonce Crazy in Love. Britney Spears, You Drive Me, or parentheses, You Drive Me, and parentheses, Crazy. Seal, Crazy. Casey and JoJo, Crazy. Ozzy Osbourne, Crazy Train, might be that one for me. Madonna, Crazy for You. And apparently Willie Nelson, I threw this one in just for Heath. Apparently Willie Nelson has a song called Crazy.
Willie Nelson has a great song named Crazy, and it's definitely in my top five. But I don't think you named the song that I just immediately thought of when you said best song with the word crazy in it.
Okay, what did I miss?
I would say Crazy Love, Van Morrison.
I don't know that song.
Yes, you do.
It's a good one. I think you missed a couple.
Well, don't blame me. This is Google, okay? Crazy Love didn't show up.
Did you get Crazy on You by Heart?
I didn't know that. I saw that in Google, but I don't know. I know Heart pretty well, but I don't know that song.
I need
song.
You to acknowledge that you do know Crazy Love by Van Morrison.
I'm gonna listen.
There's no way you've not heard that song.
I'm going to listen to it now. Hold on.
Actually, I love She Drives Me Crazy by the Fine Young Cannibals.
She drives. That's a good one. that's not the best, but it's pretty good.
Crazy Bleep by Buckcherry. That's not a good song,
oh,
but it exists.
That's not a good song? It's a nutty song. They've got some pretty controversial. I don't know this song, Heath.
Give me love, yeah, love, crazy love. Come on.
I don't know it.
I'm thinking crazy. Oh, you didn't mention Crazy Little Thing Called Love also.
Ooh, another great good song. One. Yeah.
I'm thinking Crazy Train is probably the best one.
I'm going to agree with you there. Crazy Train. Heath, can we make it a sweep?
Probably Crazy in Love.
Heath, let's go. Crazy Train over this Van Morrison song?
I don't think so.
All right.
I think I'd probably go this Van Morrison song and then Crazy by Willie Nelson.
Okay. All right. Fun topic. Anyway, let's do some news and notes, knock these out real quick, and then we will get to some crazy stats and your emails, fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. We do not have a show on Monday. That is President's Day. And then we have Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday for you. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday shows. Tuesday is going to be some rankings disputes. Wednesday is going to be rookie quarterback evaluations and dynasty risers. And Thursday is going to be rookie running back evaluations. I love looking back at the rookie classes. News and notes, Deshaun Watson is interested in going to Tampa Bay and Minnesota, according to ESPN. Where would you guys rather see him go if you had to choose between those two destinations, Tampa Bay or Minnesota?
Probably Tampa, I guess, just because the difference between Kirk Cousins and Deshaun Watson, while it would be pretty big, is not nearly the difference between Deshaun Watson and whoever Tampa Bay would currently be starting. So I guess
I mean, if I'm just looking at it specifically for Watson, I think I would choose Minnesota. especially dynasty wise, just because the pairing of Watson and Jefferson over the next however long. But either one would be fine.
Yeah, like I don't currently have Mike Evans or Chris Godwin in my top 20 at wide receiver based on what their offense looks like right now. So those guys could definitely use a quarterback of any renown.
Okay, Sean McVay is not retiring.
Good.
And
which is good because he's younger than Shraggy B. I'm not sure why he would be retiring.
He's younger than every. He's not younger than Chris and Shraggy B, but he's younger than me and Heath, Dave, and Jamie as well. It would really kind of piss me off if he retired. He didn't put in a.
What do you mean?
That's not a career. So he's 36, I think.
Okay, but if assuming I don't know how much money he's made, but
hasn't made enough money to retire.
He's made over $10 million, right?
He's definitely made enough money to retire.
After taxes, you know.
Lives in L.A. It's very expensive. You're right. You know what? I think he has not made enough money to retire comfortably in L.A. if he wants to live the lifestyle that I assume he wants to live. Yeah, you can't retire.
In L.A.? Like, if he's going to probably go to Arizona, somewhere out in the desert.
Maybe. Head coach Mike McDaniel of Miami said he would start Jalen Waddle. He's got a lot of Jalen Waddle love. He said he'd start Jalen Waddle in fantasy. I would too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was.
We did last year too.
I got there, so.
You're going to need something better than that. Tell me you draft him in the first round.
We started him over A.J. Brown in that, was it the Niners game when A.J. Brown on Thursday night went berserk and had... It was his first game back, I think. And we started, Heath, you and I, we started Jalen Waddle over A.J. Brown. I don't know if Mike McDaniel would have done that.
We won that league.
We did win the league. We won that week in the league.
He is a top 10 wide receiver for me, so it's not really... I can't really move him up, Mike.
Dave said that as well. I did not come out that high on him.
But. Oh, more on him later. It was 11 catches, 145 yards, and a touchdown for A.J. Brown on our bench. New Orleans is keeping offensive coordinator Pete Carmichael. So he called plays in three seasons, 2011, 2012, and 2016, and the Saints were second, third, and second in scoring in those three seasons. So they are keeping their offensive coordinator. Obviously, Sean Payton had a huge influence, but this is good for continuity's sake. And finally, Buffalo GM Brandon Bean said his priority in the offseason is going to be protecting Josh Allen. They were 14th in pass blocking, according to PFF. They had a lot of injuries on that offensive line, moved guys around a lot. They weren't that bad, but obviously they want to be better.
If your priority was truly protecting Josh Allen, you would not call so many running plays for him, right?
Do they call running plays for him a lot, or does he just run?
They had a lot more in the second half of the season, I believe.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's his job to slide, Heath. All right, right into the crazy stats. Here we go. This one is from Heath Cummings. You want to read it or you want me to read it?
Wow, I gave two crazy stats and one of them was the headliner. Like,
yeah.
That's fantastic. I'll read it.
Okay.
Joe Burrow was at 8.9 yards per attempt last year, 8.87 if you want to be exact. Fourth best since 2000 with a minimum of 500 attempts. There were six others who were at 8.7 or better and played the next season because Deshaun Watson didn't play last year. They were Matt Ryan, Aaron Rodgers, Kurt Warner, Patrick Mahomes, Phillip Rivers, Carson Palmer. The following year, they averaged 7.55 yards per attempt, or on average, they lost 1.4 yards per attempt, which for him would put him at 7.5. If Joe Burrow averages 7.5 yards per attempt next year, he'll need 94 more pass attempts to match this season's yardage total.
Okay, 94 divided by 17. That's 5.5 per game. And
it's a lot.
It is a lot. And what did you say? What was the average? 7.5?
5.5.
Okay. So you
Which
guys
I think
can talk.
Was still above average this year. I think 7.2 probably was pretty close to league median.
Okay, let's just see who was in that 7.5 range. Herbert, Prescott, Cousins, Lamar Jackson, 7.5.
So you could totally believe that Joe Burrow was at 7.5.
Yeah, like he could be in that range, right?
I think, where was Josh Allen last year?
Well below, I think. Let's see.
That's what I thought.
Josh Allen had a very low passer rating. Josh Allen averaged 6.8 yards per attempt. That was 23rd. This could be a crazy stat in and of itself. Let me see his passer rating here. He was like 16th or something.
Right.
Josh Allen was 16th, 92.2. Very strange.
I did not realize Josh Allen's yards per attempt regressed that much.
It was weird. He threw 36 touchdowns.
I think Josh Allen is the perfect example, because we just came off of an offseason where a lot of people argued, no, he's clearly ascending. Look at his last 3 years. Why would you think he would go the other direction? And it's because anytime you have a season that great, you go the other direction the next year, almost always. I will give the one example, and he's not in this because his pass attempts were kind of weird year over year. Kurt Warner from 99 through 2001 actually had a 3-year stretch at 8.7 yards per attempt or better. I don't believe anyone else has ever done that. Now, he had like 250 attempts 1 year and 499 another year. It was the greatest show on turf. But if you think Joe Burrow is going to have a Kurt Warner run, then he could keep it up.
Josh Allen did finish his QB1 this year, though.
In fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's weird. Where did the
Joe Burrow's probably not going to rush for 600 yards.
No. Now, can he throw that much? I'll point this out. I remember we talked about after the San Francisco game, Zach Taylor said they had been very conservative with Joe Burrow because of the knee injury, and they decided we just have to run the offense through him, basically unleash him and stop being so conservative. Well, from that point forward, Burrow's pass attempts went up from 31.8 per game in his first 13 games to 35.6 per game in his last 7 games, including the postseason. And they were 6-1 in those games. So they did start throwing more, if that's encouraging.
It's not discouraging. It's the kind of thing where, like, I would think 35 pass attempts per game seems like a reasonable number for Joe Burrow. And given the weapons that they have, you could expect him to be, you know, more efficient than not just the standard, your typical quarterback, but more efficient than the baseline level of what you would expect from him, I guess would be the way that I would say it. Because Jamar Chase is going to break a lot of big plays, because T. Higgins is a good downfield receiver as well. So, you know, I think that does help him. It is interesting to note that after the San Francisco game where they needed to unleash him, his next game was 22 pass attempts.
Yeah, I know. But
I think
after that, they unleashed him.
The bigger point, I don't think it would be that abnormal at all if he had 605 pass attempts next year. If his pass attempts went up by 94, I think if somebody says that's what's going to happen, if he throws for the same number of yards this year as he did last year, he's going to be a bust, because people aren't going to draft him to be QB11 or QB10.
He's QB8. But remember, he played 16 games. So you got to factor that in with the pass attempts, right? He threw 520 times in 16 games. All right, anyway, let's move on to our next stat. Crazy stat number 2. If you listen to FFT and 5, I butchered this so bad. And Heath called me out for it. And I was like, no, I'm right. And I was totally wrong.
Wait, Adam, can I throw one thing out there?
Yeah.
About the previous one? It's sort of the same thing as Derrick Henry last season, where, you know, he's coming off this 5.4 yards per carry, 2,000 yard season. He had 4.3 yards per carry. Now, he was still arguably the best running back in fantasy when he was healthy, but, you know, he was much less effective on a per carry basis. It's just the kind of thing that happens with outlier seasons. It's not necessarily like Derrick Henry was worse this season, or Derrick Henry is going to be worse because he was so good. It's just like outlier seasons are outliers, and you typically can't reproduce them. So that's really the case. It's not really a Joe Burrow stat. It's a statistical regression. It's the kind of thing where, like, when you get a couple of 80-yard plays, it's really hard to keep doing that. Like the Jamar Chase touchdowns against the Ravens in that first game.
Yeah, I gotcha.
And at least one of those probably should have just been like a 12-yard gain.
And to your point, every 2,000-yard rusher has lost at least a yard per carry the following season.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to our next stat. Only one player in the last 4 seasons has averaged more than 9 yards after catch per catch. On FFT and 5, I said after contact, because I wrote after contact for some reason.
That's what you have here, yep.
And I Ron Burgundy'd it. But it's more than 9 yards per, more than 9 yards after catch per catch. Only one player has done it in the last four seasons. It's Deebo Samuel, and he's done it twice now, two seasons in a row. He statistically, Chris, doesn't make a lot of sense. He just does things that nobody else does, and you wonder how sustainable it is. And he's also really annoying because at finishing as a top five wide receiver, where so much of his production was based on his running skills, it's like it messes with all the trends that I try to look for in a top five receiver. But anyway, after catch, he's just sensational. Do you think that'll continue with a new quarterback? Presumably.
I would think so, just because it's the way the offense is designed, and I would imagine Kyle Shanahan is going to continue to dial up those kind of easy throws that allow his playmakers to get the ball in space and make plays. And, you know, Deebo almost did it 3 years in a row. He was at 8.3 yards after catch in 2019 as well as a rookie. The thing that's wild about Deebo Samuel is getting a lot of yards after catch is highly correlated with your average depth of target. Shorter catches tend to lead to more yards after the catch. Deeper targets tend to lead to much fewer. That's why Mike Evans routinely has very unimpressive yards after catch numbers, because he's getting, you know, 15 yard down the field targets. He had 8.3 yards after the catch on a 7.5 ADOT in 2019, and then 10 yards after the catch on 8.4 yard ADOT in 2021. That's really, really difficult to do. And so I think he is arguably the best receiver in football with the ball in his hands, and I think that's going to continue. He's not going to average 18 yards per catch this season, and so there's going to be significant regression for him. He's probably not going to have 1,400 yards and 18 yards per catch again. The question is, one, how much volume is there in this passing game? Two, how much volume is there in this passing game for each receiver? How are they going to distribute the target that do exist? And then three, and I think the biggest thing for Deebo's fantasy value is he going to be a running back again,
yeah,
the way they used him in the second half of the season? I ended up with him as my wide receiver 15 in my projections and wide receiver 13 in the rankings. And I have George Kittle as tight end 7 and Brandon Ayuk as wide receiver 45, I think. So,
did you say 15?
Yeah.
Wow. In full PPR?
And so, yeah, and it's really the 49ers have a math problem. If Trey Lance is their quarterback,
yeah,
I think for fantasy, it's going to be really, really hard. If he's going to run a bunch, they're going to not throw as much as they did last season. And Ayuk, Kittle, and Samuel are all going to be healthy, which is not something that's really happened all that much in their careers. It's going to be really hard for them, for those three guys to be fantasy relevant at the same time. And I don't think all three of them can do it.
Yeah, Heath, I kind of felt like Deebo Samuel established himself as the number one option. You know, I don't really think Brandon Ayuk is much of a threat to Deebo Samuel right now. I don't know. My feelings could change on this, but man, I wanted to doubt him. It's kind of like Cooper Kupp. As it was happening, I was like, what is going on? Cooper Kupp was actually better in the playoffs in four games than he was in the regular season. And then Deebo is just, he's just the man, you know? I mean, when they needed a big play, they went to him. He was awesome again in the postseason, you know? So I don't know. He just kept proving me wrong.
Yeah, I had a much easier time believing Cooper Kupp than Deebo Samuel, and I've got Cooper Kupp as my number one wide receiver for next year. I think Debo's around 12. So I do think, like, we had seen Cooper Kupp be an elite fantasy wide receiver in the past. We had seen him, I would say, perform closer to what he did last year than we had Deebo Samuel.
Yeah.
So I think I'm surprised that I'm ahead of Chris, and now this gives me the courage to move Deebo a little bit lower. but I do think, like, it's just a wild, do you expect him to have 60 rush attempts again next year? Do you expect him to score once every 7 rush attempts again next year?
So what do you make of this then? What do you make of this? Because you're 100% right. I mean, the rush attempts are crazy. As soon as he had the rush attempts, though, he stopped with the receive. But if you look at his receiving totals before he became more involved in the running game, he was having a tremendous year just as a receiver. So Heath, do you think if the rushing totals go away, does he just go back to being a stud receiver and having a more conventional star season?
Yeah, and he can be a stud receiver and regress. Like if he's somewhere between wide receiver 12 and wide receiver 15, that's a stud receiver.
So Waddle or Debo?
I still have Debo higher than Waddle, but I'm the low guy on Waddle apparently.
Yeah, I have Waddle a little higher, but it's very close.
All right, let's do our Waddle stat then. Crazy stat on Jalen Waddle, who was the number 21 wide receiver in non-PPR, number 12 in PPR. This kind of says it all. He had 104 catches in 16 games last year. He had 106 catches in 34 games at Alabama. He averaged 18.9 yards per catch in college and 9.8 yards per catch as a rookie with the Dolphins. Jalen Waddle was just a completely different type of player who very rarely made a big play last year and did it very frequently at Alabama. So, Chris, you are the high guy on Jalen Waddle. Do you think that there's another level that it could be unleashed in Waddle?
Absolutely. I think he's an incredibly talented player who clearly has the ability to make plays down the field. And there were some stretches this season when, you know, especially early on when he was making some plays down the field, and that kind of got derailed by Tua's rib injury and then the transition to just this almost entirely RPO-based offense. And I think that's what happened with him. That's why he averaged 9.8 yards per catch, is because basically, I mean, they kind of turned him into like a Jarvis Landry type. Yeah. It was, you know, their offense was based on RPOs and quick hitting passes, and that was really good for Jalen Waddle in a PPR league, and I expect that will continue to a certain extent. But with Mike McDaniels taking over and coming from the Kyle Shanahan offense, I would expect more of those, you know, what was the stat? The 49ers led the league in in-breaking targets by like some massive. They had like more, like twice as many in-breaking targets as any other team in football, and that's partially to take advantage of the playmakers that they have and the guys that they have who can make plays with the ball in their hands. And that's been a focal point of the 49ers as a team, you know, in building their offense. And I think we'll probably see more of that from Jalen Waddle, not so much just these quick slants where they're trying to get 8 yards and nothing more. I think we'll see more opportunities for him to get the ball in space. And I think you'll see his yards per attempt or reception jump to like 11. I'm not going to say it's going to be like 18 or 15 even, but I do think we'll see more efficiency from Jalen Waddle on his second season in, you know, somewhat similar volume.
I do think it's interesting to compare this one, what we just talked about though, with Debo, because I came into this year thinking Devontae Smith is the safe guy, the technician, the guy that's already polished and ready for the NFL. And Jalen Waddle is the elite specimen who is a little bit worried about year one, is might be a little rough around the edges.
Right. And
that was not the type of season, obviously, that we got from either. But with the type of athletic profile that I thought Waddle had, I would have anticipated him having a few more plays like Debo Samuel. Like, he was at 4.2 yards, whatever, the Azer stat, yards after the catch per reception. On a 7.1 ADOT, and you mentioned Jarvis Landry, sure, or Deontay Johnson. Very similar numbers from Deontay Johnson over the past few years. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that he didn't do more after the catch on all those short targets.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. That was something that he definitely could do in college, but he did have over 1,000 yards as a rookie, and that is hit 900, Heath. You know, I love that in 16 games.
It's 1,000 now, right? It was 900 for a 16 game.
No, well, he did it in 16 games, so that just makes it easy. But no, it's not 1,000. What would it be? Like 960?
956 or something?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think if you play 17 games and you don't get 1,000 yards, you're not good now.
Oh, DK Metcalf, right? I don't think.
But he wasn't a rookie. It's fine.
Oh, okay. Then he's fine. Yeah. All right, next stat. Let's talk about two wide receivers who had the same amount of targets, Devontae Adams and Deontay Johnson. They had 169 targets, second most in the NFL behind Cooper Kupp. Same amount of targets. Adams had 392 more yards than Deontay Johnson. That is a staggering difference. 2.3 more yards per target than Johnson. Johnson was a top 10 wide receiver in both formats. He was 8th in PPR, 10th in non-PPR. He had 107 catches. An interesting guy to evaluate, Heath, with a new quarterback coming in. But not as good as Devontae Adams, I think, is what I'm uncovering here.
Whoa.
It appears to be true. I could say the same thing I said the last 3 years, which is everybody else, including Ben Roethlisberger, appears much more convinced that Deontay Johnson is good than me. And I'm worried about him, depending on where they go at quarterback. If they stay at Mason Rudolph, then I think the pass volume probably drops and the accuracy of the throws doesn't get any better. If they draft Malik Willis, I think the pass volume probably drops, and I'm not sure that the quarterback play in terms of throwing gets much better this year. And all Deontay Johnson has given us in his career is targets. Now, he doesn't really even catch these short area targets at a particularly good level, doesn't really do very much after the catch, has a pretty average touchdown rate. He just gets 10 targets a game, which is a skill, and I'm not putting that down. But if, and I've made this joke, but I think it's true actually, if Ben Roethlisberger was the reason that the Steelers threw so many passes, and they are not going to have Ben Roethlisberger in the huddle audibling out of these run calls anymore, I expect the Steelers' pass volume to drop. I don't think Johnson's efficiency improves, and so I don't think it's going to be as good.
That, would they have to upgrade at quarterback for him to be better?
Yes.
Yeah, it's not that easy to do.
It shouldn't be that hard because Ben was really not good.
Yeah, but then look at how bad they were the one game he missed. You know, right. Mason Rudolph has been worse than Ben Roethlisberger. So you
look how bad they were the whole season that Ben Roethlisberger missed. You know,
right. Exactly.
It's going to be, I don't know. I struggle with it because I do think, you know, Deontay Johnson's passing game role and even Najee Harris's passing game role early in the season, you know, obviously it tailed off, but I think both of those things were a reflection of the dysfunction of the Pittsburgh Steelers offense. I don't mean that as a knock on Deontay or Najee Harris, even though it is one and comes off as one, but it's to say that, like, in a normal functioning NFL offense, Deontay Johnson is probably more like a 23% target share guy. And in the Steelers offense, he was, I think, 28%. And that's that is probably not an ideal way to run your offense, you know, funneling so many targets to a guy who, he was a 30% target share guy this season.
Yeah.
You know, funneling so many of your targets to a guy who's not a great playmaker with the ball in his hands necessarily, does a really good job of getting open, but doesn't get open downfield necessarily. So it's tough because I think the most likely outcome is the Steelers offense is probably still pretty dysfunctional.
Yeah.
If the volume goes down, that's going to be a concern.
A lot of people really believe they're
on the right track. The way that they could make their offense better this year is Malik Willis at quarterback and run an offense similar to what the Eagles did or the Ravens do and just run the ball a lot more and be more efficient running it because you have a running quarterback. But even in that scenario, that's bad news for Deontay Johnson.
Well, what if it's Kenny Pickett?
He still have a 30% target share, but you know, if that's coming from 540 pass attempts as opposed to, what was it last year, 680, it's probably not going to, you know, you're just going to lose 40 targets off the top.
Yeah, but if it's Kenny Pickett, and I mean, he's a Pitt guy, then that's a more conventional pocket passer, very accurate guy. I'm not the biggest Kenny Pickett fan, but what do I know?
We would expect, though, I would say, based on what we've seen from rookie quarterbacks in the last decade, we should not expect Kenny Pickett to be a more efficient passer than Ben's been the last 2 years.
Well,
I don't know. I mean, I expect him to be better than Mason Rudolph. I don't know if he'll be better than
6.2 yards per attempt and a 3.6% touchdown rate is pretty awful.
Was there a rookie that was definitively better than that last year?
Mac Jones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I think. Probably.
I don't. Okay.
All right. Let's go to our next crazy stat. Tyreek Hill. He went 5 straight games without a 20-yard catch. His longest stretch in, any of the three previous seasons was two straight games without a 20-yard catch. Pretty amazing. So five straight games without a 20-yard catch for Tyreek Hill, who finished as wide receiver 7 in non-PPR, and it's going to be better than that in full PPR. It was wide receiver 6. So much better.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah. yeah, so, yeah, you know, a very different year from him. 111 catches, but only 1,239 yards. Just different. Very different version of Tyreek Hill.
Which weeks were those?
Probably like 4-8, something like that. They were just before the start of the Mahomes rough stretch, because I think that kind of started with the Tennessee game. I think it was two games before Tennessee and then two games after Tennessee, and obviously included.
I think it will be really interesting if the Chiefs add a wide receiver. Is it someone, because I do think, I don't know if it's reflected in the full season numbers or not, but there was definitely a stretch where they had to change the way they were using Tyreek Hill, because that was the only way they could get him the ball, because the defenses took away a lot of the things that they've done with him in the past. And I'll be interested to see if the Chiefs add someone like Juju to take care of those short area stuff so they can send Tyreek deeper again, or if they add more of a deep threat and keep him closer to the line of scrimmage. His average depth of target was 10.4 yards per target this year. It was 12.9 the 2 years prior and 14.8 the year before that.
Yeah.
Well, risky, right? So, I mean, it's a little risky to take him. He feels a little risky this year for the first time. In 2022, he feels a little risky for the first time, I'd say. Is that a fair assessment?
I do not agree that he's never felt risky. He has felt much riskier than this in
you
the past
so?
For a variety of reasons.
You're talking about the off-field stuff. But just from a performance standpoint, this is the riskiest I think he's felt since he, you know, burst onto the scene, I guess.
But see, I don't know, because what we saw happen with Tyreek Hill is exactly what you would expect to happen if defenses are focusing on taking away the long ball, is they just started throwing a ton of targets to him in the short area. And so he still ended up as wide receiver 6 in what is widely acknowledged to be a down season. And then in the postseason, he had 23 catches, 285 yards, and 3 touchdowns. I just kind of think what this showed was Tyreek Hill's kind of foolproof for fantasy.
Like, I guess
if
that
he's
just,
not going to be the guy who averages 15 yards per catch and scores 760-yard touchdowns in a season, well, he can be the 110-catch guy. And, you know, there was that stretch late in the season where he just wasn't healthy. I mean, really, the last 3 games, I would say, at least.
He averaged about 4.5 fewer PPR fantasy points per game than he did in 2020. He averaged 3 PPR fantasy points per game than he did in 2018, which was his first great season. 2019 was a down year for him. Mahomes was injured. He was injured. But
it sounds like he's been really good in even years, and we should expect him to be awesome in 2022.
No, he was good. I think maybe more of a philosophical question. You look at what he did in finishing as wide receiver 6 overall, but was he a disappointment? I think if you had Tyreek Hill, you were disappointed. And if you draft him again near the end of round 1, beginning of round 2, in that range, and he gives you 17.6 PPR fantasy points per game, I think you're probably going to be disappointed.
Yes. But again, I'll mention those last 3 games where what was the injury that he was playing through?
He
only
got
played
hurt
42% of the snaps and then 18% of the snaps in 2 of those 3 games.
He got hurt
It was the Pittsburgh game.
In week 18?
No,
they played him in the playoffs. Yeah, I don't remember
because
what
before
it was.
Through week 15, he was averaging 20.1 PPR points per game, and I would assume if you just add his postseason to his overall numbers, he probably gets back pretty close to 20 PPR points per game. So that's the thing, is I'm not sure how. Like in the moment, it certainly did feel pretty disappointing. I'll grant that, but in retrospect, I'm not sure it was necessarily. I don't know if that's
I will just say
that makes sense.
Like what we've seen, if 17.6 PPR fantasy points per game is Tyreek Hill's disappointing, then I am very excited to draft him at the 1-2 turn.
He does deserve an Acer stat.
for a lot of other people in that range is much, much worse.
He deserves an Azer stat, honestly, because played 42% of the snaps, as Chris just said. I can't count the Denver game. 14 snaps, two yards on one catch. I mean, that's killing his average. All right.
Yeah, I mean, they played the full game. He didn't. Right. Like it wasn't like the offense didn't play the full game. He just didn't because he wasn't healthy.
All right, let's take a break. I got five more crazy stats. We're going to have to go a little bit faster here. Five more crazy stats plus your emails right now, when we come back, rather, on Fantasy Football Today.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're back. Let's talk about some running backs. Who saw the most eight-man fronts in football? Well, I don't know. I think it was Deontay Foreman, but really the stat I have is about who saw the third most eight-man fronts in football. I think it was Deontay Foreman, though, believe it or not.
Derrick Henry actually saw a higher rate of eight-man fronts than Deontay Foreman. I think I saw that on Twitter yesterday.
Derrick Henry saw a higher rate? I don't think so. I think Foreman did.
Okay.
Because I think. And this was actually...
That doesn't matter. Someone on Tennessee.
This is actually percentage-wise, not total eight-man fronts. Anyway, the guy I wanted to focus on was Eli Mitchell. And what I noticed was the guys who had the eight-man fronts were not necessarily the best running backs. They were often just on the teams that were kind of one-dimensional. Didn't have great passing games. Anyway, Eli Mitchell saw the third highest percentage of eight-man fronts. And what does that mean? That's when the defense commits an extra defender into the box, so to speak. Averaged 4.8 yards per carry against eight-man fronts. By the way, that also could be just a product of the offensive formation. If you come out with...
It's mostly a product of the offensive formation, from what I understand. The three teams that run the fewest 11 personnel also tend to see the most stacked boxes, and that's the Titans, the Browns, and the 49ers, because those teams, the 49ers use their fullback a ton, way more than any other team in football. The Titans and Browns run the most two tight end sets.
I will say that I found the tweet that Chris was referencing because there was a discussion about Foreman and Henry averaging about the same yards per carry last year. Josh Larkey says Derrick Henry faced stacked fronts 24% of the time, Foreman 14.3% of the time.
So I think that's a different stat than the eight-man fronts also.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Stacked versus eight-man, a totally different thing.
Yeah, I don't know what the difference is, but clearly it's different because Elijah Mitchell was I don't know, actually.
This is a stupid stat, I think, then.
Which one's a stupid
useful.
Stat?
The percentage of eight-man fronts. But the other stat was that Eli Mitchell averaged 4.8 yards per carry against eight-man fronts. That was fifth best behind Rashad Penny, Nick Chubb, A.J. Dillon, and Tony Pollard. So
that's he was great. George Kittle's the best blocking tight end in football, probably. And Kyle Juszczyk's a really good blocker, so that probably plays a pretty good part of that. And Deebo Samuel's an excellent blocker as well. And Brandon Ayuk probably got better at blocking because that was a big part of why he wasn't playing early on in the season, from what I understand. So that I think is like Eli Mitchell's good.
This stat sucks, Chris.
It's a 49er stat, I think. The 49ers have an incredibly efficient running game. And that'll probably be the case next season with Trey Lance.
Nine crazy stats. Okay, here's number seven. Number seven. The three running backs with the highest run grade, PFF gives a grade to all the running backs. The three running backs with the highest run grade from Pro Football Focus were all backup running backs who had 100 or more carries. D'Ernest Johnson, Tony Pollard, and A.J. Dillon were the highest graded running backs. Jonathan Taylor was fourth, and Damian Harris was fifth. Heath, do you care at all about that? D'Ernest Johnson, Tony Pollard, and A.J. Dillon were the three highest graded running backs. And it's not like they had 15 carries here. Like I said, they all had 100 or more.
Right, but they all probably had less than half the number of carries of Taylor, I would assume. And I think that's probably just a little bit of a lesson of the law of large numbers. But I don't also don't fully know how that formula works for the grading and the numbers. So
very scientific and not subjective at all.
Yeah. D'Ernest Johnson was really good. A.J. Dillon and Tony Pollard were really efficient. But
does it make you more confident that Johnson's going to be a tough spot if Kareem Hunt's back, but that Pollard and Dillon, if given the opportunity, if there's an injury or something like that, does the run grade make you more confident in their home run potential?
Not Pollard, because I think Pollard has an incomplete in his grade against defenses that are expecting the run. Because he doesn't do a lot of the things that Ezekiel Elliott has looked so bad and slow at. A lot of Tony Pollard's runs are creative and exciting and fun. And then Zeke gets the ball and runs between the tackles. So, but Dillon, yes.
Okay.
I struggle with Dillon and Aaron Jones. I don't know exactly how to project them, and my split could be entirely wrong because I ended up with Aaron Jones as my RB15, AJ Dillon at 28, and I'm certainly going to be the low guy on Dillon with that ranking. And I would guess I'm going to be pretty high on Aaron Jones with that. I have them getting the same number of carries, actually. I just think Jones is going to have the much bigger role in the passing game. And I'm not sure Dillon is just like a better goal line back than Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones has been really good in that role. So it's really tough to know what to make of that situation, especially, you know, if Jordan Love is the quarterback instead of Aaron Rodgers.
Would it make you feel better to know that I came out with Aaron Jones at 13 and Dillon at 30?
A little bit, because that was with me moving Aaron Jones down from 11 in the projections.
All right, guys, next up. Oh, it's another Heath Cummings stat. Stat number 8, Heath. You want to read it?
Yeah, I mean, this one definitely deserves to be behind the Davante Adams is better than Deontay Johnson stat and the 8-man run.
Look, dude, I couldn't give you the first two slots.
Josh Jacobs averaged 3.8 catches per game in his final 15 games, including the playoffs. In his first two seasons, he only had 2 games with more than 3 catches.
That's wild. That's a great stat.
Yeah, no, that's partially, was it the coaching staff change? Was it Kenyon Drake getting hurt? I would think Kenyon Drake getting hurt played a decent part in it, but no, that's a good sign for him. It was why he kept finishing as like a top 15 back every week, even when he wasn't that good. And I kept ranking him as a top 10 back every week, just because if you're going to get 5 targets per game, which he pretty much was, it's really hard not to be a top 15 back. And if he's going to get 5 targets per game next season, it would be really hard for him not to be a top 15 back. I don't have him as a top 15 back. But I also acknowledge that I probably maybe am being too conservative in his projection.
This is one that I think I have him 9 right now. So we're opposite on this one, but he is going to make me the most nervous because new coaching staff, a coordinator that for most of his career has had a designated pass catching back.
Right.
And Jacobs last year, while it was great that he got the targets, he averaged 5.4 yards per target, which is about 10% worse than league average for running backs. And he's at 5.5 for his 3-year career. So he hasn't actually been good, although he did catch 84% of his targets, so that's a positive.
But although then 5.4 yards per target looks even worse.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm starting to think he's just a guy. Like, I know he was a first round pick, and But it's hard to disentangle this from the fact that their line hasn't been as good the last couple of seasons. But I just, yeah, I don't know. He doesn't, there's not a lot about Josh Jacobs that looks all that impressive when you look at his career as a whole. So I don't know what he's good at.
I will say that the thing that is above average probably is the way he's scored touchdowns the last couple of years. And that's something that New England backs. They've generally had a guy who scores a lot of touchdowns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They usually have a great offense, but even last year they didn't have a great
offense.
How many
carries do you have him projected for?
I have him projected for 286.
I have him for 235. That probably explained most of the difference in where we've got him.
All right, running back stat. Well, stat number nine, crazy stat number nine, and about another running back. I already talked about this earlier this week with Dave and Jamie, but I would like to know how you guys feel about it. And it's just basically Rashad Penny and his big playability. He had 119 carries, yet he had the third most 20-yard carries in the NFL, 20-plus yard carries in the NFL, behind Jonathan Taylor and Nick Chubb, who had a lot more carries than he had. He had, like I said, 119 carries, and 11 of them went for 20 or more yards. I already gave his stat last time, but for Heath and Chris's purposes, the second most amount of 20-plus yard carries by a running back who had fewer than 130 carries was 4, and he had 11. He also, Rashad Penny, led all running backs in yards after contact per carry. So, I mean, I can dismiss 6 games because he played, you know, he played against some really easy matchups and he tore them up. I do have a harder time dismissing big playability. I watched almost all of his carries and I'm just confused because he doesn't really look very fast. He looks kind of slow to me, but could just be deceiving because he's a little bit bigger. But man, I mean, what a stretch for him. And the big plays really jumped out to me. So
I would say it definitely if he had some dreadlocks, just like some extensions that he could put on the back of his helmet so that you could see his hair bounce on his shoulder pads, you would definitely think that he's faster.
Second round pick.
It'd be a second round pick. He's really going to be an interesting guy. Is he back in Seattle? Is Chris Carson back in Seattle? Does somebody else try to go take him from Seattle? Because I believe he's an unrestricted free agent and Carson's still under contract. I don't have any idea. I'm going to let NFL teams tell me what they think of that, I think.
Yeah, they're not going to invest much, I don't think. He's so injury prone. But yeah, Chris, I mean, do you care about the explosiveness, the ability to make those big plays that register?
There does seem to be some year-over-year stickiness in the leaders. Like Jonathan Taylor was one of the leaders in 2020. Nick Chubb was number two both years. Dalvin Cook. But, you know, a lot of that's also a product of how many touches those guys get. But, yeah, like Nick Chubb is consistently a home run hitter. Derrick Henry is consistently a home run hitter. Maybe Rashad Penny is that guy as well. But we have such a small sample size that I don't know that him doing that in such a small number of carries necessarily tells us all that much moving forward. Because sometimes you roll a dice 12 times in a row and you get 4 sixes. And it doesn't necessarily mean that those 4 sixes are going to happen again. So that's the difficult thing, just because we don't have any kind of track record for Rashad Penny. He had 40% of his career carries last season, and he didn't get a lot of carries last season. So I really struggle with him. If he's the number one back somewhere, he'll probably be in the low-end RB2 range. But I can't see myself investing a ton in a guy who probably isn't going to have much of a passing game role and has very little track record on the ground. I think it's nice to see. It was great to see him play that well, but I don't necessarily buy it. Well, that was what he was in college. It's worth pointing out.
Okay, let's go to our last stat. Aaron Rodgers has now led the NFL in touchdown rate 2 straight seasons. He is the first quarterback to lead the NFL in touchdown rate in 2 straight seasons since Aaron Rodgers in 2011 and 2012. And what's more crazy, what's even crazier, the touchdown rates were almost identical. In 2011, it was 9%. In 2020, it was 9.1%. And then the following year, it was 7.1% and 7%. And he led the NFL in both those two game stretch, two season
stretch. You want something even crazier?
Uh-oh. Go.
Davante Adams went from a 12.1% touchdown rate in 2020 to 6.5% in 2021. And Aaron Rodgers' touchdown rate didn't change.
No, it did change. It did change.
Not a ton.
2%. I mean, 9.1%
to 7%. Here's a real scare for you. The year before he did it, last time in 2010, he had a 5.9% touchdown rate. The year following, in 2013, he had a 5.9% touchdown rate. Mm. So eventually he got back to the same guy he had been. Unfortunately, the year before he did this, he had a 4.6% touchdown rate. So I think he's probably going to have a terrible year. That's not how it works.
Well, he's never going to be among the yardage leaders, at least as long as he's with Green Bay. And he's not going to be among the rushing yardage leaders. But he is also one of the greatest football players of all time. So,
well, yeah, I think if you do the, if you set 5.9% as his standard, you know, he would fall from QB6 to QB9, which isn't a huge fall, but you're talking about 2 points per game. It drops him from, you know, the borderline elite territory to more like a Kirk Cousins. And I think that, you know, Kirk Cousins has had really good touchdown rates the past three seasons. So I don't know. It's like a 5.9 touchdown percent would be really, really good. That
Rodgers has, yeah. Rodgers has the second highest.
Yes.
Ever.
Touchdown.
Is Russ or Mahomes is number one, right?
Mahomes at 6.4, Rodgers at 6.3, Russ at 6.2, and then Watson at 5.9. That's among active quarterbacks. There's some guys from the old days who only threw like six passes and they were all touchdowns. But
okay. All right. So where do you come out in your rankings, guys? Aaron Rodgers.
QB6 for me. That's assuming the status quo in Green Bay, but he's in a tight group with Murray and Burrow and Stafford and, you know, then I think there's a drop.
Yeah, I've got him fifth. It's and there's a little bit of a teardrop after him, but he's behind Mahomes, Allen, Jackson, Herbert for sure, but ahead of Murray, Hurts, Dak, and Wilson and Burrow as well.
Yep, that's pretty much the same range ish for me.
What a crazy show! Wow, and. One email. Time for one email here. I had three in here. I'm going to save a couple. Save our Keeper Dynasty questions.
Is it a crazy email?
No.
Oh.
But it is from Bradley, and he says, "Dear," and I don't know how to pronounce these names. Qui-Gon, Jar Jar, I know him. Shmi?
Mm-hmm.
And Maul.
Yep. Yep.
Darth Maul, I know. Shmi is from Hook. Oh, that's just Shmi.
Hold on, let me grab him. I've got my little Darth Maul bobblehead here.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a big nerd.
Is Qui-Gon a good guy?
Qui-Gon was Obi-Wan's master.
Ah.
He's, yeah.
Okay. Sounds
he's,
like a good guy.
Liam Neeson.
Oh, okay.
You don't, you've never, oh, you, hey, that's right. You're not a Star Wars guy.
No, I am. You don't know? I watched.
Right, but yeah. Have you watched the prequels?
Not yet, no.
Yeah, it's.
No, I watched Bloodsport instead. Which was really interesting, really weird, but good fighting. Anyway, from Bradley, I'm trying to learn more about value-based drafting to answer my questions about why certain players deserve to be drafted at a certain spot. My main question is, if value-based drafting is the optimal strategy for fantasy drafts, My main question is, if value-based drafting is the optimal strategy for fantasy drafts, and if so, what are the key principles and advanced tips that you guys can give me? I'm just a college student who loves fantasy football, looking to get my foot in the industry. What is the biggest piece of advice you can give to someone in my position?
Biggest piece of advice I would give to someone who is currently in college is write for your college newspaper. Mm. If you want a job in any journalism industry or content creation, because you need clips. You need to show that you can do it.
Chris, come on. It's a dying industry. Get on the radio. Get on college TV.
Look, man, I did Radiate FM, college radio station. Did multiple. I was the football play-by-play guy back in college. There are some clips of that.
Hey, yeah, me too.
They're probably not good. I was on the newspaper. We never did video, but you know, that was God, the halcyon days of the aughts.
Chris is right, do it all.
If you want to get into the fantasy football industry specifically, you have to have a baseline of, you know, showing that you can do the writing part of and the podcasting and all that stuff. And, you know, you're going to probably have to put in some time for not very much pay. And doing that in college is probably the best time to do it, because you've got more free time there than you're going to have pretty much at any other point in your life from this point on. So, and
yeah,
don't do what I did and take a statistics class and drop it because you didn't want to take the midterm.
That's basically what I did with economics. So
learn all those things the kids are doing these days. The R
coding, R and Python.
Q, the black snake.
SQL.
Whatever all those things are, learn those. But I think the more important thing is, and you can do this in writing, you can do this on radio, you can do this on video, you need to do it on all three, is you've got to figure out what your voice is and who you are, and like who you're, or at least who you're going to present. And you need to have like a developed voice, and that will help a lot.
And if you don't like your voice, use your mixer to make it sound deeper.
That is something you could do if you're insecure.
I don't do that anymore.
Develop a non-regional dialect.
What is that from? That's a thing, right?
Lots of things.
I just wanted to share a story. I did UMTV. I did the news. I was a news anchor for UMTV at college, and I had to sit on a phone book to make myself taller next to the girl I was sitting next to.
Did I ever tell you about the time I almost got kicked out of high school newspaper?
No, but can we save it for another show?
One of the most embarrassing. No, I think you should do it at the end of the show. It's one of the most embarrassing things.
I want this to be the beginning of a show.
No, it's definitely not the beginning of a show. I had a lot of columns and stuff in high school, and it was my junior year, and things were going really well. And there was this thing over, I think it was Courtwarming. The two winners of Courtwarming, I was supposed to write a little feature on them, which was not my cup of tea, not the type of thing I did. It's like homecoming for basketball and wrestling season. And so the problem was, I knew both of them very well. One of them was on the basketball team with me, the guy was, and he said, you know, just write some stuff and I'm good with whatever. And that was great.
Oh no.
The young woman who won, I knew her as well, but I was terrified because I'd had a crush on her and I couldn't speak to her hardly. And I just did the same thing with her profile didn't ever speak to her. And that didn't go over very well.
She didn't think
it was okay.
If the biggest piece of advice I can give to someone who wants to get in the industry, don't do that. Don't make up quotes. That's one of the first rules.
That is awesome.
Amazingly, I was on the staff next year.
I'm a little surprised Heath was on the high school newspaper. I thought you would have been too cool for that.
No.
Yeah, I'm with you.
It was just me and a bunch of other nerds locked in our windowless room.
Why is it that we think Heath was so cool? Because we were so uncool.
And he's tall.
Yeah, he's very tall. It's true. Okay.
Like, that goes a long way in high school.
I know. I just had to fill out an application with my height, or like going to the doctor, and they asked me my height, and I'm just so embarrassed by it. But anyway.
You give yourself an extra inch, right? 5'4".
I can't do that at the doctor. 5'4"? Maybe I can bring the phone book.
They don't measure you?
Well, when you're filling out the form, it's there. They ask you, and then, you know, they go check your work.
Oh, 5'9", huh?
I'm in shoes.
Anyway, anything on value-based drafting?
We did a show on this last year, we should do another one this offseason. It's very, very helpful and important, and I think a little bit overlooked now. We shouldn't do that now.
We should do it's a long question. Do you think it's better than not doing it?
I do.
Okay.
A lot of my rankings are based on the concepts.
And a lot of it is like the idea that it's about figuring out who the best player available is, right? Like it's not just, you know, you should generally take the best player available. And I think positional scarcity is probably overrated in fantasy and in, you know, both baseball and football, the two sports I cover. But it's about figuring out like where the positional scarcity ends and where it doesn't, and what spots you should be vaulting either some guys over others and stuff like that. But yeah, it's basically just trying to have a method to what you're doing. I think that's the biggest advantage that it can give you, is just you've got a strategy. You're not going in, you know, just, well, I think this guy's better. I think that's the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm. We will do. I will pressure Adam to make sure we talk about this. Maybe we'll have a drafting strategy show.
I like it. Yeah,
and we could talk about that. Are you guys ready to be Charlie Brown?
More discussions of that sort.
Charlie Brown. Yeah,
you ready to be Charlie Brown?
Sure.
Stranger Things season 4 is coming May 27th, volume 1. At least that's what they say now. This is, I believe, is like the third or fourth time that I thought I knew when Stranger Things.
I don't think they had like announced a date officially yet, though, right?
There's been spring of what,
May 27th?
May 27th, and then volume 2 comes July 1st. So we're probably getting like 6 episodes on the 27th and 6 on July 1st.
That's going to be fun.
They probably have to spread them out because the cast has gone from like 12 to 19.
They're going to have to do a time jump midway through the season.
For sure.
Yeah, well,
that's fun. Obi-Wan comes out on the 25th. That's going to be a very nerdy weekend for me.
They have to find a way to justify me keeping my Netflix subscription because it is the most overpriced service now.
I need to start charging family is what I need to start doing.
Yeah, me too.
You still have time to catch up on The Marvelous Miss Maisel before the next season releases on Friday.
Not a chance.
Tomorrow.
I do not like that show.
I can't get into it.
It's a play. It's a play. If I wanted to go to the play, I'd go to Broadway. It's a theater, and I don't.
There's not any singing.
The way that it is scripted.
Wait, hold on, Heath. You know there's plays that aren't musicals, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I understand, but it's not a play.
No, it is a play. The way that it is scripted is very theater-like. The dialogue is very
hilarious,
over the top.
Her sets are funnier than Seinfeld sets on Seinfeld.
All right, we gotta go.
What is the deal with my husband? Why did he leave me?
We gotta go, everybody. We'll talk to you later. We've got no show on Monday, so have a great President's Day weekend. Talk to you on Tuesday on Fantasy Football Today.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.